with my music. Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Sherry Winston was my guest last week. She's back again this week, and thank goodness for that, because we did not get through our wonderful sexual agenda. We talked about skillful communication in the bedroom and different types and levels of touch and creating a great set and setting for romantic encounters and getting back on track quickly when challenges arise. But this evening in the East and this afternoon in the West where I am, we're going to talk about the role of positivity and fun, also about orgasms and their part, and how to create and then play inside a conjoined erotic trance. Welcome again to the program, Sherry Winston.
Thanks for having me back. I'm glad we're going to get a chance to cover the ground that we just couldn't have possibly had time for in
no.
this session.
There's so much to talk about, and I love the quote from John Houseman, Tantra teacher, about you. And he says, Sherry is the ultimate uber goddess of juiciness. She is brilliant, hysterically funny, encyclopedic in her knowledge of sexuality, wise, intensely compassionate, and on and on and on. So you've got a real fan. Of course, I'm another fan. You've got a lot of fans, I think, Sherry.
I do. It's true.
I know, isn't it?
I'll take that one. Yeah, thank you.
Of course. Of course, and isn't it such a pleasure, and isn't it so satisfying to do the work that we do and help people improve their sex lives? And, of course, your book, Succulent Sexcraft, which people can find on Amazon, it's helped so many of my clients, and they love the questions at the end of your chapters, and we talk about them in sessions. So I'm even talking about you when you're not present, and it's through your book.
I had somebody say to me once, I just want you to know that, you know, you're in my bedroom all the time. I'm like, okay.
So we keep better than a picture of mother and father. Yeah. You know, I think right. sometimes having pictures of your parents in the bedroom aren't always such a good thing, or even the
no,
children.
Probably. Yeah, probably better to have sex books.
Sex books, yeah, sex books.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So you tell us about your online course, and I'll, of course, and when I do the write-up of the show afterwards, I'll include the IntimateArtsCenter.com website. But tell us about this course that you're, tell us about it. It has to do with...
Well...
Yeah, Secrets of Partner Pleasure, right?
It does. So the current course, the one we're in right now, which people could still hop into if they wanted, is about really learning how to turn yourself on, how to amplify your own pleasure. And then the next one that starts, I should know this date, starts in 4 weeks. The next one is really about how to give partner pleasure and how to play nicely with others is the way I like to think of it, how to have amazing, awesome, erotic encounters with another person. So that's about your pleasure, their pleasure, or in this case, you know, everyone's pleasure.
Oh, it's so inclusive. And everybody has better smiles on their faces, and they feel better. You know, there are so many... I continue to marvel at the health benefits of good sex, and I recently read about two of them that I'd like to share and have your comments on. And one is that vaginal secretions and shark liver oil have something in common, and that is squalene. And this is an organic compound. It's used in cosmetics because it's a natural moisturizer. It's used in vaccines because it boosts immunity. And and health supplements because it might ward off cancer. So vaginal secretions, this gives lots more meaning to the value of cunnilingus, of, and I can say this on internet radio, of eating pussy. I mean, it's very good for your partner's immune system, right?
Well, I did not know this, so thank you for giving me some information that I did not know.
Yes.
The fact is that I think all of our erotic secretions, male ejaculate, female vaginal lubrication, mm-hmm. female ejaculate, all of these secretions, I think, actually do have health-promoting benefits to them. It makes sense to me. And in all the traditional tantra and Taoist sexuality traditions, they all believed that these secretions had, you know, magical properties, health-enhancing properties. So it makes sense to me. I mean, you know, breast milk has all of these wonderful health-enhancing properties to it. Why wouldn't our other bodily secretions be just as wonderful and good for us? So it makes perfect sense to me that that would be the case. As if we needed more health benefits than what we already have, which is that pleasure is good for us in every way, in every possible way. You know, it's good for our immune system, it's good for our mood, it's good for our cardiovascular health.
It's good for,
there we go.
It's good for our brains too, and climax orgasm may improve brain function because during orgasm, women can have increased activity in more than 30 areas of the brain. I mean, you know, it's just amazing. all of the benefits
thing,
of pleasure.
Yeah. We evolved for this.
Yes,
you know,
we did.
Part of human evolution, and part of our evolution was that sex for us became so much more than just about reproduction, like it is for most of the other animals. So it makes sense that it would be good for us in all of these multiple ways.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So positivity and fun, we've already sort of broached on some of the positive things. You do it for health, for fun. You know, I remember years ago reading Bernie Zilbergelt's book on male sexuality, and he said, because his first book on that came out in, I think it was right around 1980.
Really a long time ago.
Yeah, and then he updated it in the early 90s, and sadly he's passed on now, but real pioneer, especially in male sexuality. And I remember hearing him speak when I lived in the Bay Area, because he lived in Oakland, and he said, so many men think that they have a job to do when it comes to sex. And so, of course, the performance anxiety sets in hugely.
Mm-hmm.
I have a job to do here. I've got to keep the erection. I've got the performance anxiity.
And I can win or fail, right? I can do it right or I could do it wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are like the only two options. Yeah.
Yeah, job to do here. So we have to work on getting our guys away from all this performance anxiety and to relax into it a bit.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of cultural pressure on everyone. You know, women have pressure to have orgasms, pressure to look a certain way. We all have the pressure of these limited scripts that we've been given about what's supposed to happen and how it should happen and how it should look. And all of those things create pressure for everyone that is the opposite of arousal, right? Anxiety is like the antidote to arousal. If you want to not get turned on, get anxious, get pressured, right?
Absolutely. And that is very true because back to the brain, the amygdala, in our brain is the fear center. And and of course, this is has evolved to be highly attuned to threats of all kinds. And so a woman needs to feel safe and protected by her man. And I think it's only then that she can surrender, let go, have an orgasm, because her amygdala has taken a nap, right? She cannot cannot do this unless her amygdala is turned off, the fear center.
Yeah, it's exactly the same as what happens in labor. You know, arousal and labor
say more about
pretty
that.
Much the same process.
Yeah, same process. Talk more about that, because people who are listening need to listen to the show last week, too, but Sherry was a midwife. And I guess you still do it from time to time, or at least you keep your license up.
No. I do keep my license up, but I don't do it anymore.
No, you don't.
I teach sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I keep my license.
What about the amygdala?
Some professional trainings.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is
in labor.
That, labor and arousal are almost the same process. And in both of them, we have to go into a deeply altered state of consciousness, and we need to feel safe in order to open. And if we don't feel safe, we're not going to open. We're not going to relax. We're not going to allow. We're not going to go into that altered state. So I just like to say to my women, when I was actively working as a midwife, you know, sex, really good sex, getting turned on and having orgasms. By sex, I don't necessarily mean intercourse, but really good sexual erotic experiences by yourself or with a partner is the best practice you could have for having an amazing, awesome labor. And also, you know, most of the time I was a midwife, I did either home birth or birth center birth, because the truth is, it's really hard to relax and feel safe in a hospital setting.
So, ah, yes.
Yeah. So, again, bringing it back to sex, the more we can create an environment, we talked about this last week, where we feel safe, where we're not distracted, where we're able to let go of our thinking and turn off our critical brain, for all of us, this is what's going to lead to the best arousal and the best erotic experience.
Yes, and so when we talk about positivity and fun, I encourage my couples to ask some questions afterwards, and you brought up something really important, and I'm always saying this, I get my clients to talk about intercourse, because I consider sex as so much more than, but to ask questions, and this is all under the heading of positivity and fun, so after they've had their sexual experiences, to ask questions like, was it enjoyable? Did you feel close to each other? How can you make it better, even better next time? Because, you know, if they ask questions like that, they're less likely to worry about, oh, success or failure, and more likely to appreciate really the rich range of experiences that sex has to offer.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's actually 2 points I want to make. Let's see if I can remember them both. The first one was about the positivity and safety thing. And we can talk more about this, but it's about creating positivity in all of your interactions, not just sexual ones. So that you aren't feeling on guard because your partner was, you know, sniping at you about the dirty dishes or something like that. So it's about creating that positivity. And then in the sexual realm, I really love to encourage people to focus on what's working and the positive. There are definitely times to talk about what's not working, but a great little practice is to do what my partner and I call run the highlights reel, which is after you're done with your erotic encounter, Tell your partner, you know, like three or four moments or activities or interactions that really you loved, that turned you on, that were great. And it's really fun because you know what happens in sex? We're in that altered state, and when we're done, especially if we've taken our time and we've been, you know, in that erotic state for a while, we kind of forget what actually happened. So mm-hmm. to have your partner mm-hmm. go, you know, oh, that moment when you were, you know, licking the back of my knee, oh, my God, that made me crazy. I loved that. It's great because it lets them know, hey, keep that in the repertoire, right? Mm-hmm. That really worked for me. It really turned me on. And I also found that sometimes my partner will say something, and I've like, already forgotten that happened. You know, say, oh, you know, when this happened, I really love that, and I'm already in like, oh, right, I forgot that happened. Yeah, that was really good. So it helps us kind of even relive that moment and enjoy it again. And then the other thing that I think is interesting
it reinforces
is sometimes,
it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, yeah?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and then sometimes it's also, you know, like maybe I'm like recalling like three really raunchy, lewd moments, and then my partner will recall some moments that was like sweet and tender and romantic or something, and I'm like, oh, wow, you know, because sometimes I can think he's only interested in the really sort of sexy, hot, raunchy, lewd stuff, you know, and then he'll recount some, you know, sweet little romantic moment where something was said or there was some, you know, sweet little delicate kiss or something. And it just melts my heart. It just makes me go, aww. And that's always good to have those heart-melty awe moments. So I love that playing the highlights tape afterwards.
I love that. And I run the highlights reel. Yeah. I am mm-hmm. going to take a page from your, because that's excellent. And we'll talk in a few moments about the conjoined erotic trance, and that's one reason you can't always recall some of these moments because you're in this sort of trance thing. So that's a very good idea, Sherry. And
thank you.
Your life partner and business partner and sexual partner is Carl Frankel, and he'll be my guest next week. And you both have been my guests a number of times, and I'm so glad we all connected because you are just, both of you have so much information, so much knowledge, and you're so articulate about it all and open.
Thank you.
So, yes. You and Carl have been together how long now?
Oh, my goodness, almost 11 years.
11 years. Wow.
How did that happen?
Obviously, it's working.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, like every relationship, we have our challenges. And
sure.
You know, I don't like to pretend that it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But I think why we're still together is that we're both always open to trying to make it better and figuring it out and working on it and playing with it. You know, how do we... So we're mm-hmm. both kind of on that same page of being able to go, you know, how can we make this better? How can we, you know, deal with this issue? So it's not like we don't have issues. We have plenty, in fact. But we're both in that growth curve, you know.
The what curve?
Well, like we're always in that growth curve. Like how can we grow more? How can we,
how can
we figure out how to do it better?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, if only more couples could be in that kind of curve. And many with inspiration from you or inspiration from me or, for that matter, inspiration from Carl with his books and all of that can grow more and can benefit and can get out of the a fight or flight mode and just be really engaged in the moment and curious and wonderful and with humor. I talk about laughgasms. Don't you like to have laughgasms? I mean, you know, you can't necessarily have an orgasm and laugh at the same time, but it can be close, do you think?
I have had the experience, and this is one of those sort of serendipity things, but I've actually had the experience where I was in very expanded orgasmic state, and something funny happened. Mm-hmm. And I went into belly laughing and coming at the same time. And
yeah.
It hasn't happened that often, because it's really just like, just the, you know, things have to sort of fall into place where something really funny happens. But I've had the experience, and it's amazing. So I've had those laughgasms. But what's more likely, what I've had a lot of, are what I kind of call gleegasms.
Gleegasms.
That's when you're in the orgasm, and then you're so kind of tickled pink about the fact that you're having these orgasms that are going on and on and on, that you kind of have this gleeful laugh that's kind of like, oh, my God, look at what I'm doing.
right.
and then, like
an altered state.
It is.
Yeah.
Very much, yes.
Oh, my goodness, it's so worth becoming a skilled lover and being so attuned to your partner that you can have these sorts of experiences. But I don't want to quite get to the conjoined erotic trance. A little bit more about positivity and fun and even orgasms. Now, I think that nowhere is humor more necessary than in the bedroom. Because
mm-hmm.
Just to go back to what we alluded to earlier with Bernie Zellbergeld, we have a job to do here. There's so much tension and pressure around sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so humor and whimsy can do a couple of good things for your sex life. And it can also produce, supply a little novelty. And novelty produces dopamine, the hormone of arousal, right?
Well, dopamine is sort of the reward hormone. But novelty gives you actually more of the adrenaline, the excitement hormone.
Excitement, okay.
But the other thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
the other thing is about sex is that, you know, sometimes you're going to zig and they're going to zag, right? I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
just, even when you're skilled, sometimes there's just things are not going to work, or you're going to fall off the bed, or you're going to knock over the water glass and soak both of you with icy cold water. So, you know, stuff's going to happen. And, you know, or your partner's doing something that just isn't working for you.
Right.
And it's great when you can be laughing about it in a loving way, not in a mean way,
right.
but in a loving way, where you can make a joke about it. And you know, that's just one of the great things about humor. It just takes all that tension out, and it's a great pressure reliever. You know, I think when I first started having sex, I thought it was supposed to be this really serious thing.
Mm.
And you weren't supposed to talk, and you weren't supposed to laugh, because it was serious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and then
serious
I pretty
thing.
Quickly realized that the sign of a good sexual relationship with somebody is when you can laugh about things, and when you can, you know, make light of challenges, and you can, again, in a loving, not in a mean way, share humor about what happens or what didn't happen or, you know, that sort of thing. So I think, you know, and that brings in that element of play as well, that if we think of it
play. Not
as work but as play.
And that is,
you know,
so
really
important.
Right.
So one way that couples can get on the same page, because a lot of times they're not in the same mood at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a list of lovemaking moods, and they may vary from one, quick recreational aerobic, and then I want to go to sleep. To two,
mm-hmm.
I'm not so interested, but I'll go along. To three,
mm-hmm.
reverent and spiritual, a two-hour momentous event. And then
mm-hmm.
you can simply put a check mark in the appropriate box to indicate your interest. Well, that's sort of a playful
mm-hmm.
approach, and it also gets you on the same page.
It does, and also it gives you an opportunity to negotiate, because maybe, you really like to have sex, but your partner is really ready to go to sleep, and maybe if you're kind of like, well, how about one of those really quickies where, like, you know, I do most of the turning myself on part, and you just kind of hang in there and, you know, jump on when the time is right or something like that, or, you know, I'm up for a quickie or not, then you can really negotiate much more easily something that's going to work for both of you.
Yes.
And
yes.
We call that changing the channel also.
Oh, I like that phrase. I'll talk more about that, because negotiation, really, think about all the areas in life that where we have to negotiate, including in the bedroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but what about
mm-hmm.
changing the channel?
Yeah.
What about
that's so
that, changing the channel?
Let's change the channel. Or sometimes you start out, you know, sort of in one mood or on one channel, you know, and then midway you're like, oh, this is just not working for me. What if we change the channel? What if we, you know, like change the music? It's like changing the music. Like sometimes you want this really romantic music. Sometimes you want this kind of, you know, bump and grind music. So
mm-hmm.
changing the channel is like that. And so again, it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with your partner or they're doing anything wrong. It's just, you know, I'm not really into this channel. It's not working for me today.
Yeah.
What could we change the channel to? So, again, it's about taking the pressure off, making it fun. And then you can also kind of name the channels that you like. You know, if there's certain kinds of fantasies or, you know, erotic role plays that you enjoy with your partner, that
mm-hmm.
could be one of the channels. Or it could be five different channels.
Uh-huh.
You know, but you're able to go, you know, how about that channel where, you know, how about the wild animal, National Geographic channel?
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me of a really bad joke about the senior citizen, the old guy, who beat his chest and he said, I feel like a wild animal, a sloth. So, he wasn't exactly on the wild, but you know, the play business, being silly, and I think it's interesting to know that silly, the word silly, did not originally mean ridiculous or trivial, because it comes from the Old English saleg, spelled S-A-E-L-I-G, which meant blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy. And, indeed, silliness is a way to feel all four things, or it could be to feel all four things, to feel blessed and prosperous, happy, and healthy. If you can really bring out the silliness in your relationship, let go, surrender, laugh, right? All those good things.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about, like, what do you do when, like, things kind of, you know, don't go well? What's a way to recover? And being silly can be a great way to recover. Have a little bit of a pillow fight, or, you know, have a little erotic wrestling or tickling or... you know, or make silly faces or something, but it's a great way to get out of that neurological fight, flight, freeze place that we get into when we get triggered. So silliness is a wonderful antidote, and thank you for the derivation of that. That's great.
Yes,
I love those.
You're welcome. something related to this is that in the... Zuni, Indian culture, clowns are considered healers, right along with medicine men and women, And if in the Zuni culture, if you came down with an illness, no matter what, you can choose to be treated by a clown.
Patch Adam.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, because keeping it healthy can be a laughing matter, after all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you and Carl both have a wonderful sense of humor, so I imagine you do laugh quite a lot. And I, with my fiance Brian, we laugh a lot and have a lot of hot sex. So it's such a good thing. It's just an amazing thing.
It's a good barometer, too. I know that if we're not having a good time together, if we're not laughing and playing, then it's time to kind of go, what's going on? There's something up, something needs addressing, or we just, you know, if our lives, you know, being so overwhelming that we're not having time to play and relax. And I think that's a good barometer to kind of go like, we should pay attention to this. We're not having enough fun together, you know. And it's another one of those sort of relationship things where it's easy to get to the point where, you know, oh, well, we've got to do the housework together, and, you know, oh, we've got to pay the bills, and we've got to take care of the kids if you got them, or run your business, whatever is going on, where you're doing all this work together, and you're not having enough fun together, so.
Not enough fun together, and that's why so many couples have the best sex when they're on a vacation. And they don't have to check off the to-do list, and they often don't have the children with them, and finally they have really good sex, and
and you have the novelty of being somewhere new and different,
exactly,
which often enables people to get out of their habits, because one of the, you know, enemies of long-term sex is boredom, right? We get
boredom.
Habits, you know. And when we're in a new environment, we're much more likely to try something new or do something new with our partner. Right? So, how can we do that when we're not on vacation?
Exactly, because most people can't afford to do that. Although, I've said to Brian, you know, it often, and I feel very fortunate to be able to say this, but it often feels like we're on a perpetual honeymoon. And, but, you know, that comes from years of experience, and not just with each other, of course, because we're seniors, but years of experience and advanced skills, too. So maybe that's a good segue into the second thing we're going to talk about in this hour, and how to create and then play inside a conjoined erotic trance. And you write, this is the state where intuitive magic happens. That's pretty powerful. And I love what you wrote in your book, Succulent Sex Craft, your hands-on guide to erotic play and practice for men and women, singles and partners. So you write almost poetically about this. I'll just read a couple of sentences, and then I'd love for you to add on. In the conjoined trance, the partners share the same level and depth of altered state. Their mirror neurons are firing, causing their biorhythms to match up. Heartbeats harmonize, brain oscillations correspond, and breathing synchronize. Partners become supremely attuned to each other's energy. The connection feels telepathic, transcendent, and sublime. And you write some more, but maybe you'd like to just comment on that as a beginning to beginning part of this discussion.
Well, I think our kind of our cultural model of intense erotic attraction, you know, what we'd see in the movies, is that people they don't talk. You know, they're passionately, madly, lustily going at each other. You know, the clothes go flying. They have this magical sex. You know, the lights go out. Fireworks go off. Everyone has orgasms, you know, all at the same time. And that's kind of our cultural model of sex. And for most of us, most of the time, that's not what happens. If we want to have sex, we need to communicate. We need to check in. We need to give feedback. So a lot of the time when we're being sexual with a partner, we're not in that state. We're often most likely to get there when we fall madly in love with somebody, when we're just like in that falling in love craziness. And then serendipitously we somehow wind up in that magic place where it feels like you don't even know where you end and your partner begins, and everything is effortless, and you're totally in the flow, and everything's really hot and just perfect, and nobody can do anything wrong. And I think the thing is that we can learn how to maximize the chances of getting into that kind of erotic trance. We can't, like, make it happen. This is all about, creating the likelihood or increasing the likelihood that we're going to get to that magical state. And I think it's useful to think about erotic trance as having levels. You know, level one is my ability to get aroused and orgasmic by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Level two is my ability to do that in the presence of another person.
Ah,
right? That's
yes.
A whole other ball game, right? There's another yes. person there, right? And then there's sort of what we often do with partner sex, where we're kind of taking turns. I'm going to focus on my arousal and getting my arousal more intense, and then we're going to focus on your arousal, and we're going to do things to get you more turned on, and we're going to be in parallel to each other and taking turns where our focus and our energy and attention go. And that's another skill set. And when we've got that one, it makes us a pretty good lover, right? Because we know, wait, I need to keep my arousal up, and now we're going to attend to yours a little more, and we can flow back and forth. And it's a lovely way to make music. And then that sort of highest level is getting to that conjoined trance where it no longer matters who's doing what to who. Everything
right.
is equally erotic, right? So you could be doing something that, you know, more traditionally might be thought of as a way to stimulate your partner. Maybe you're giving your partner oral sex.
Mm-hmm.
But you're so attuned to their arousal, and you're so turned on yourself, and your trance states are literally bioregulating each other, that you're getting just as turned on and just as aroused by giving the oral sex as your partner is from receiving it. And we can maximize the chances of getting to that state by getting really skilled at those first and second level abilities of getting really skilled with my own erotic energy, getting really skilled at flowing back and forth, and then ultimately going to that place where it's really all good.
It's all good, and you're right. When we're pleasuring our partner, we're pleasuring our own self equally. The line between giving and receiving vanishes. You get as turned on by doing as by being done. And you write, this is part of your wit, you got to love those mirror neurons. I'd like to take a moment and define the mirror neurons that are in our brains. Reflect back an action we observe. And
mm-hmm.
this makes us mimic that action or have the impulse to do so. Mirror neurons make emotions contagious, letting the feelings mm-hmm. we witness flow through us. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I agree with you. Gotta love those mirror
yeah.
neurons.
Yeah, it's part of our empathy system. That's
mm-hmm.
the reason you see somebody else bang their thumb with a hammer, and you go, ow, and you wince. Because literally when we see those things happening, we can have the same emotional reactions, the same sensations actually occur in our body.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that humans clearly have evolved quite an elaborate system, because we're social animals. We have to be able to get connected with other humans. We need each other. We literally
mm-hmm.
physically do. You know, when babies and mamas are the best example of that, but that you need to be able to be in this deep empathic connection where you feel
yeah.
what's going on with the other person.
Right.
So that all that hardware is right there, and we can learn how to make, you know, maximum use of it.
Right. Right, to make maximum use of it. Your partner, Carl Frankel, and we'll talk about this next week some, in addition to boundaries, that's going to be our theme, I think. But Secrets of the Sex Masters, and co-written and edited by Carl Frankel. So in his chapter, on energy sex with Reed Mihalko. I think that's how he pronounces his name.
Reed Mihalko.
Yes.
Yeah, Reed Mihalko, who's a fabulous, fabulous sex teacher.
Yeah, I would love to meet him because I love this chapter, too, and especially this quote, because I used to, well, my late husband and I lived in Hawaii, and then going way back quite a few years, my first job out of college was teaching school in Hawaii, and then I left for the mainland, and I came back. Anyway, I love Hawaii, so I love this quote, too. Every time you do energy sex, you're taking a vacation from fight and flight. Not only is it good for your blood pressure and health, it's like lying on a Hawaiian beach with orgasms. Love that. Yeah.
He's funny. He's smart and funny.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, energy sex.
Right. And what we're talking about when we talk about conjoined trance is energy sex. It gets to the point where you literally don't even have to actually be doing anything to each other. You could be looking at each other, breathing, sounding together, and literally feel the erotic energy just moving through both of your bodies or all of your bodies if there's more than two of you at the same time. It's really it's really amazing and learnable. I think that's really the important point I want to stress here, that these are learnable skills, and anyone can learn this stuff.
So I think I'm really glad you're making that point, because a lot of people listening might think, oh, this is not 101 sex. This is grad school sex. But I think, yes, people can learn it. But they have to be motivated, right? And maybe they have to also do a little work on themselves first.
Well, I think it's motivation, but if you have the desire, have that motivation, if you want it, you can learn it. And like anything else, it's like learning to play the piano or learning to speak French. You can learn that.
Yeah.
Right? It's totally learnable. You just,
right.
once, you know, so I think that's the important framework. You don't have to learn it, but you can if you want to. And there are people like me, like Reed, like you, who are out there that can help people learn it.
Right.
So you don't have to figure it all out on your own, you know. And I like to say that it's not like the orgasm fairy came to my cradle when I was a baby and sprinkled magic dust over me, you know. Everything I can do now, I've learned how to do. And if I can learn it, anyone can learn it, because I'm just a normal person. I'm not, you know, like I said, I didn't get like the orgasm fairy. Right?
Absolutely.
So.
Well, all right. So we're really talking about, when we talk about conjoined erotic trance, it's also a feeling of being in sync. And I think it's quite integral to relationship satisfaction, because intimate sex, feeling connected and conveying our affection for one another, well, it requires us to slow down and really tune into each other. And and a lot of couples, you know, race to the finish line. It's easy to lose sight of your partner's physical and emotional needs when you're racing to the finish line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you're not, you know, in that big picture, when you're just, you know, in that quick, short, you know, just let's get off and go over and go to sleep, you're missing out on all that connection. You're missing out on that bioregulation that I was talking about.
Yes.
And, you know, it's I'm not saying a quickie is a bad thing.
It can be an okay thing every now and then.
Right? You know, it's a snack. It's
a snack.
A quick meal. Right, but is that what you want to eat all the time? Is that going to be a healthy diet for your relationship to always, you know, always be in a hurry, to never really be focused, to not be able to take the time to slow down and connect? And it's hard to connect. I mean, I think if, you know, we're all so busy, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to take the time, slow down, turn off our devices, and you know, and really be present. And I think sex is one of those great opportunities to do that.
There was some recent research that showed even the presence of a cell phone, a smartphone especially, derailed communication between people. I'm often saying, love interrupt us. Get those devices out of the bedroom. Turn everything off.
Mm-hmm.
It even interferes with sleep, that blue light. If you're up looking at devices late, it can produce insomnia for some.
But, we need to remember that we're mammals, we're animals, that we have bodies and they have needs, and part of the need system that we have is to be in pleasure, to be in a pleasurable connection. And how can we do that if our main connection is to our device?
Yeah. And haven't you noticed in the last few years it's gotten worse? I mean, people are just so plugged in and they don't know how to unplug.
I'm going to say it's gone from a thing that I used to say to people, you know, in the old days, just like, don't have a TV in your bedroom.
No, don't have a TV, right.
Right, don't have a TV in your bedroom. But now it's, you know, when I tell people, like, don't bring your phone into your bedroom. Don't have a computer in your bedroom. You know, people, a lot of people find that to be a shocking piece of advice and very hard to
yes,
follow.
Yes, I know. I know. So this is a little bit of a segue, but it has to do with not only unplugging, but practicing often. You know, Dr. William Masters of Masters and Johnson, in the late 70s, he advised his trainees, and I have a quote from him, "Tell your couples that 24 hours must not go by without some sensual touching." And it turns out that couples who practice their intimacy skills with regularity and frequency are most successful in maintaining their progress years after therapy with me, or classes with you, or reading your books, or whatever have come to an end. If you practice and making time for daily loving, you know, you will create this environment where passion and intimacy becomes a way of life, but you got to practice it and be aware of it, right?
It's so true. And, you know, touching, eye gazing, kissing, like really kissing, not like a little peck, but like a real, you know, soft, wet, luscious kiss. These kinds of things are all of the things that we naturally did when we first fell in love with somebody. When you first are madly in love with someone, you touch them and you look in their eyes and you want to kiss, and, you know, and it's just the sort of natural behavior that comes with the falling in love hormonal biochemical state.
Yeah.
And if we can take those behaviors and continue them after the training wheels are off, after the biochemicals of falling in loveness have gone away, then we can keep that energy going. So that was like that's the instructional period that Mother Nature gives us.
It's
like, okay, when you first fall in love, you're going to do all these things. And then if we're smart, we're going to go, oh, okay, let me keep doing those things. Let me do them on purpose. Let me do them consciously. And then we keep that energy going.
Keep it going. Because Anna Freud, and I guess she was Sigmund Freud's daughter, right? She said, sex is something you do. Sexuality is something you are. And mm-hmm. so that means that you've got to integrate your sexual education and help us move beyond, compartmentalizing stuff of our sexual selves, that integrate it.
Mm-hmm.
Sexuality is something that we are.
Mm-hmm. We are sexual beings, not sexual doings.
Yeah. Sexual doings, you said?
I said we're sexual beings, not sexual doings.
Hey, that's what I thought you said. Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. It's not about what we do. It's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and how do we integrate that, especially in the world that we live in where, a lot of our work now is in our head. It's a lot of thinking work, or, I sit at my laptop and I'm, when I'm writing, and, it's not physical, it's not very embodied, and that's where a lot of our life is. And so
mm-hmm.
it's even more important for us that we do things that are physical and embodied and sensual and pleasurable, for our own mental health and for the health of our relationship if we're in an intimate relationship. That's why we have animals, too. That's why we have our companion animals. That's why we call them pets, because we pet them, and that's part of where I call my cats my oxytocin generators.
cats are oxytocin generators.
Right?
Yeah, and it's as good for them as it is for you. Right?
Exactly. It's such a good analogy, right? When you're petting your pet because it feels good to you and it feels good to them. And we should, and ideally we're going to be the same way with our partners, right? When we're petting our partners, it's because it feels good for them and it feels good for us and it's good for our relationship.
You're talking about cats and pets. I'm reminded of my dear friend, Candida Royale, who died just a year ago now she died of cancer and I miss her so much. We were good friends for 20 years, and you know who I'm talking about because
Lucky
she made
you.
She was the pioneer, really, of erotic films for couples to watch. She started in,
she was such a pioneer. She did so much great work. And lucky you to have been her friend.
Oh, I agree.
I admired her from afar.
Yeah, she was also a very intelligent woman and so much
mm-hmm.
fun. And, she and her boyfriend at the time visited Charlie and me in Hawaii, and we just had, when I lived there, and we just had so much, lots of play. And we also played, not sexually, but it was just general play, right, in New York City and Los Angeles and many places. I learned a lot from her. But she had three cats, and at the time of her death a year ago, just over a year ago now, ovarian cancer was her cancer, which is such a bad one. She had three cats, and she always had cats, and they were her children. And so I understand that her cats all found good homes after she died, and I'm very glad of that. But talking about cats and oxytocin, anyway, I just was reminded of, I was just devastated when Candace died. I mean, she fought so bravely, and so I'm taking a few minutes here just to acknowledge her and her memories and
she was such a pioneer. I never had the pleasure of meeting her. But I'm so familiar with her work and her intelligence and all that she brought to the field of sex positivity and a woman-centered approach to erotica. And she was really did such important work. So
she really did.
So,
and You know, imagine she was on the scene in 1984 when VCRs were coming on board and the theaters that were the stereotype, the men in trench coats would be in these theaters masturbating perhaps, and now the VCR, you mm-hmm. could watch stuff at home. And she saw that there was an opening for mm-hmm. good films with good lighting and good direction and a plot. Women like to have a plot. You know, they may see
yes,
it with male porn. You know, mm-hmm. How come this couple is fucking? Well, because they like each other. They're in a relationship.
I still think for most porn, what's often missing for me, not just the story, is the energy
mm-hmm.
And the affection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, good sex has often got this quality of affection, you know, so maybe you are, you know, sucking your partner's cock or something, and then you give him a little kiss on the tip of it or something, right? That
right.
moment of just sweet affection. And that's the stuff that to me is such a big part of the turn on, that most porn, it's just, there's no affection, there's no connection, there's no energy. It's like,
exactly.
It's just, yeah, it's so uninteresting to me. But yeah,
so,
that's
yes.
what I love
yes.
about, you know, good
well,
connected sex.
We're coming to the end of the program, Sherry, and of course, I want to have you back because it's a fun interview. And you have a quote at the very end of your book, Emile Zola, and I think this describes you. So here's the quote. If you ask me why I came to this earth, I will tell you, I came to live out loud. I love that. And, I mean, it resonates for me, too, because I've been trying to live out loud I am living out loud. Sometimes over the years people say, Diana, you talk way too much about sex. Well, that's probably true, but I can't help myself.
Well, you know, I get a lot of people having conversations about sex with me all the time. You know, and they'll say things like, I never get to talk about this. And I'm like, really? I get to talk about this all the time.
<You're right.
laughs> And then I go, and you can talk about it really a lot too, because, you know, people, this is a human thing. People want to talk about it. People want to know about it. And it doesn't have to be scary or filled with shame. It can be normal and celebrated and understood and we're here for.
Well, I don't know what happened there. Are you still there, Sherry?
I was. Where did I leave off? I was saying that.
Oh yeah.
You know, sex is
celebrated.
Something we can all talk about and celebrate and understand and learn about and get better at.
Right.
So.
And it's good to talk about it. A small study was done of. I'll have to. That's the music. So I'll save the story. Thank you, Sherry, for another illuminating hour with you. It's wonderful.
It's a pleasure as always.
Thank you. All right. Bye, bye, everybody.
Love it. Love it. Happy feet. Da da da. Happy feet. Da da da. Happy feet. Oh, I love it.